Okay, everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Liberty Lens. I am your host, Big John, joined, despite evil and malevolent forces conspiring against us to actually get this episode done today. He is still with me, still a trooper, always ready to have a go at it, Mr. Mike Termott. Mike, how are you doing today?
It's good to be with you. The malevolent forces weren't all that big a deal. Just for your audience's edification, I had screwed up something about my camera. And, we were trying to attach another camera. That didn't work. Another camera. That didn't work. So, we finally figured something out. No big deal. I'm sure for someone who is, even more technologically proficient, it wouldn't have been any big deal. And indeed, it wasn't a big deal in the end. It's good to be with you and good to be talking about something tangentially related to technology today with you.
Yes, absolutely. Nice segue, Mike. So one of the things that came across both our sort of collective conscience this past week as we were trying to figure out what we want to talk about is, hey, what's the situation with social media, censorship, its relationship to free speech? This is always a hot button issue, Mike. But it seems to, again, sometimes things just seem to snowball all at the same time, right? Yep. So right now, let me toss out some things, right? China, next week, the government of China is rolling out essentially a single sign-on, a national ID for logging in.
Yep.
And, of course, it's positioned as a way of being convenient. It's a mode of convenience.
Yeah.
And for
in order to serve you better.
Right. I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, of course. Here's the thing. Now, some people immediately say, but Big John, what's the big deal? Here in the U.S., certainly in other countries, we have Google tokens that let you log in at numerous websites. We have Facebook and Amazon logins that are trying to be single sign-ons everywhere. What's the big deal? Here's the big deal, at least on the surface. These are not government-run efforts, right? Whereas in China, it just builds upon that Chinese internet wall where they're trying very hard to restrict and regulate and censor what its citizens are allowed to see on the internet. So, and of course, the tracking, the social...
and what you're allowed to do on the internet.
What you're allowed to do, the social...
In both directions. What you see and what you say, both directions.
Right. Literally, just everything that crosses... So before we continue, this is just one of those things.
Yeah.
In the UK, we also have seen the leveraging of what they call, let me see, the Online Safety Act of 2023.
In order to make you safer
from something as deadly as words, they are policing their social media, especially their social media, for hate speech, for offensive speech. People have been arrested and convicted on this. Canada has done similar things in its recent history. In India, the government and X constantly go back and forth. You had something recently where the government of India requested, let me look at the number, almost 2,400 accounts be blocked on X. Under their Section 69.
That's actually a funny story. Let's come back to that in a moment.
Sure. So all over the world, you kind of see that this tension exists. It exists here in the U.S. We'll get to that under a separate section of discussion. But talk to me about globally, Mike. And this may sound almost too simplistic, but why are governments so interested in controlling social media?
Your audience is by now way out ahead of us. Let me see if I can catch up to what everyone is thinking.
Sure.
Governments are interested in social media because governments are interested in governments. Governments want to stay in power.
Yes.
And if you're a government that isn't particularly good at staying in power through what we might in the West loosely call democratic forces, then you're going to have to stay in power through other means. And that means controlling what it is that your people think about you. Because there's nothing better to control civil unrest than to control the civil. Mm. You need to control your society if you don't want them getting pissed off about you as a government. And this is the problem that communist regimes have around the world. And it's no coincidence that the governments who want most to get good at controlling the internet are those that are least democratic. And that line does get fairly fuzzy. Good for you for bringing up the United Kingdom, which is a weird example. And what a shame it is that the transition from discussing the Communist Party in China to discussing the United Kingdom, that's really a shame. And for all of the criticism I have heaped upon J.D. Vance from time to time, he was not wrong when he delivered that speech some months ago in Berlin.
It was in Europe. Yeah, I'm not sure.
It was in Europe. Yeah. He was certainly talking to Berlin and talking to London, whether he was located there or not. Maybe someone right. in your audience can do a quick fact check and bail us out. When he talked about the fact that if the Europeans are not going to share a fundamentally similar view toward civil rights, especially free speech, similar to how America views these things, then are we really sufficiently on the same page to pursue other long-term strategic objectives?
Hmm.
Wow, that's a shot across the bow. Because right. on the one hand, we tend to think of ourselves as having so much in common with the Europeans, with the democratic institutions there and the democratically elected governments, that we would literally go to war with them and for them, right? This is all in the context of NATO. And if it probably does need to be said, if we don't share fundamental values to the extent to which we have always believed that we do, then why is it we are in a defense alliance with each other?
Right.
Right? Relationships have to be built on something really fundamental. So anyway, to your point, the Chinese are rolling out a new technology in order to control what it is that people see and what people say. And I think it's fair to say this has two major initiatives. One is the ID, right? The national ID. It's a virtual ID. So that they know who you are. They know what you say. They know what you hear and what you watch. And they can track it down very granularly to
right.
the individual. And the other initiative they have is the deployment. They've been working on this for a long time and will be working on this for a long time into the future, the deployment of artificial intelligence in order to track down things on the internet they don't want you to see.
Right.
And this is a major component of what has loosely been referred to as the Chinese firewall on the internet. Walling yeah, off the Chinese population from the rest of the internet. Yeah.
Now, I am perhaps somewhat deviously acting naive here, but let me put the question forth to you. Do you see any potential difference between the Chinese reasons for wanting to control and track what people say on the internet and the UK's perhaps reasons for wanting to do the same thing?
Fundamentally, I would say no. Right. There's a difference in magnitude, I hope. There's a difference in magnitude. You brought up the idea that, Google has tokens and all these big tech companies have an interest in developing relationships with you. They're trying to capture that relationship. Each company is trying to capture your data,
sure.
capture the relationship, make that relationship sticky, so that they can sell you related services, they can keep you in more than one channel. We get all that. And, capturing relationships is something that we have discussed in business for a century and became a very sure. hot topic, especially in financial services for you and me a few decades ago. We all understand how this works. But in China, they want to capture you, not just capture the relationship, right?
Right,
if that relationship doesn't work out, it's not like a business that says, Crumb, we lost you to a competitor. No, they capture you. They will just lock you up at the end of the day if they have to.
Right, right.
Hopefully the UK is not going that far with all of this.
Right. I again, just playing the role of a Pollyanna here. the Chinese reasons for wanting to control or track you on the internet, I think, are self-evident. But in the UK, ostensibly, they're saying, hey, we're a nanny state, essentially. We're looking to take care of our citizens. So in order to protect them from hate speech and from threats and bullying and whatnot, that's the reason we're enforcing this Online Safety Act. Now, whether you and I believe that or not, is entirely not the case.
Yeah.
However, do you see a difference, at least in the posturing of the two governments?
Again, no. Okay. And I do appreciate you giving me an opportunity to take a second bite of the apple, but I still disagree. I'm not going to throw the UK further under the bus, but I'm going
right.
to give the Chinese Communist Party a little bit of street cred here. The party does believe, you can't read people's minds. You can't go with a blanket statement that covers individual by individual. But
right.
the Communist Party does believe that they are doing right by their people by protecting them.
Perhaps, yes.
Remember that this is a group of people that grew up, I mean, except for the 90-year-olds, right? This
right.
is a group of people who grew up in this system believing that the government really is here to help you. You know,
right.
these are true believers, and they do believe that the Western culture would be bad for them, and that's what they're keeping out. And if you pursue this too deeply, it gets pretty cringy and pretty hard to sustain pretty quick, you know, if you drill down into what they have written. From a Western point of view, it looks pretty bad pretty quick. But in their frame of reference, they are trying to protect you.
Mm.
And I think that the same thing can be said for the UK, nor should we let the UK off the hook. There is a tremendous amount of self-interest on the part of politicians. Now,
right.
in the UK, a politician is trying to stay in power by posturing to provide you safety. And so they may claim that they're providing you safety, and they may even mean it.
Right.
But that is the means by which they are trying to stay in power. And I think that the advent of new technologies brings up a new whole series of applications for us to think about this friction between free speech, what we call in the United States the First Amendment, which of course doesn't exist anywhere else, not
right.
just as a constitutional amendment, but free speech doesn't really apply anywhere else in the world either, to the extent to which it does in the United States, and that's being challenged. This friction between the two is going to be different going forward because of the vast capabilities that governments are going to have. And I think that it's one of the things I find fascinating is that social media in the United States, which is to say worldwide, has developed in a way that's really unfortunate coming off of I don't know the extent to which you want to drill down in the Communications Decency Act of 1996 and the 26 famous words, but the bastardization of how that industry was set off in its development starting in 96
right.
has led to an industry that is able to monetize these algorithms and control what it is that we see without facing any liability for being, in effect, publishers. And that's particularly important and unfortunate because the technology to allow end users to control their own experience does exist.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
We know this.
Sure.
But these platforms are not open source providers to their end users of how to interact with the content. They control that very tightly because that is their business model. And so it's very difficult for end users to control their experience. And while ruminating about this over the past few years, and by the past few years, I mean the past, 29 years, ever since 1996, but it occurred to me in the last couple of weeks since the Chinese government's announcement of what's coming I think that there's a particular irony here, which is that governments have different requirements. I'm trying to be generous. Have different requirements that they're imposing on these companies, right? India wants one thing. The Chinese government wants one thing. The UK wants one thing. Australia wants one thing. Canada wants one thing. The United States government wants one thing. They all want something different. They all want some level of censorship, a different style for an ostensibly different purpose, different content. They all want something different. Well, Facebook seems perfectly capable of tailoring your national experience to your particular interests.
Sure.
Because it's in their financial interest to accommodate the Chinese government to a certain extent so they can continue doing business in China. And the same thing with Australia, the UK, Canada, and the United States. But they will not capitulate to the end user.
Not directly. You're right. Not directly.
Not directly. Only because governments are the ones able to put pressure on them.
Yeah,
and
so
I find that dichotomy fascinating and unfortunate.
Yeah, let's take a small break here because you mentioned Section 230, and it's very important to the way we view things, right? So Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act of 1996. So we're coming up, to me and you, Mike, this may seem like it only was a couple of years ago, but now
it
we're coming
like
up.
It was like yesterday, and we had to follow this closely. Youngsters, go ask your mom.
Yeah, but already it's been 30 years, you know, so... So, again, this is one of those pieces of legislation that came out of, quote, government's desire to protect you, to take care of you.
Yes.
Right? This is really the origins of the act itself, which was, hey, we don't want kids stumbling onto porn sites, onto adult sites. We don't want people gambling online. You know, things that we would – that as libertarians we would say these are not crimes. Well, not the child portion, but say gambling.
A lot of the content – In some cases the content was criminal.
Yes.
And in many cases a lot of the content was legal but disgusting. We all get that.
Right. And also like activities that are illegal here but legal out of the country, like gambling. Sports gambling is one of the prime examples until that got rescinded. Anyway, so Section 230 of this act said that platforms that like social media, are not legally responsible for the UCG, UGC, user-generated content, meaning anybody's post.
Yep.
The company, the Facebooks, the Twitters, what was the big one then? That was the first one with Tom, the engineer. Now I can't remember the name.
Going back, the originals in the important court cases were CompuServe and Prodigy.
CompuServe and Prodigy and AOL Online.
AOL, right.
So they said, hey, suing us for bad content or for criminal activity in that sense would be like suing your telephone if you made a call, right? So they had a legitimate argument. But part of that, you would think, would be that then in that case, if you're claiming that right, you can't be a content creator or a publisher if you're one of these platforms. So unlike a newspaper, which has an editorial position, which does edit everything and pays people to write for them, hey, we're just platforms. Now, the sneaky or sort of debatable part of that act is moderation flexibility, that these platforms, even though they're not publishers, they retain the right to moderate. Like, for example, which kind of makes sense, right? If you're a Facebook, you don't want posts showing nudity, right? That could be a policy. So while you're not editing each individual post, you have a blanket policy enforced by some algorithmic thing that says, if we see something involving nudity, you can't post it. Not on Facebook, right? Go somewhere else to do that. So that was Section 230. And for the most part, I think libertarians like us would support Section 230, Mike, right? Like, hey, you know, we're maximizing free speech.
There was a time.
Mm.
However, I would like to see 230 repealed.
And, talk to me.
And let me explain why. For starters, it's important to understand the legal environment in 1995 and 94, not just 96, preceding Section 230, preceding the Communications Decency Act, there were two very important court cases, Prodigy and CompuServe, in which these platforms had been sued because of crap that was posted on their sites. And CompuServe was a company that openly said, we don't edit, we don't censor, we don't touch it, we don't even look. Anyone can post anything. And the courts agreed that CompuServe was like a bookstore, was the analogy in those days. To your point, was like a telephone company, was like a common carrier, and therefore could not possibly be held responsible. That's an important case because the truth of the matter is that if we had left well enough alone, if the federal government had not gotten involved, it's going to shock you that I'm going to say that the federal government jumped in and screwed it up. If the federal government had left well enough alone, these social media companies would have developed without having liability anyway, just like CompuServe, if they just refrained from censoring, if they had refrained from editing, if they had refrained from pulling stuff down.
Right.
On the other hand, the big court case was Prodigy, which was another platform where people posted stuff. They got sued, and they were a company that had said, we're going to work at keeping our site clean. We're going to pull stuff down. We're going to pull down naughty stuff, yada, yada, yada. And the courts said, well, if you're going to do that, then you're like a publisher. You're not just like a bookstore. You know, to your point with newspapers, right? Newspapers are publishers, and they're allowed to take positions. If you're in New York and you want a Democratic newspaper, you know to pick up the Times. And if you don't want to read all about how wonderful Democrats are and you have a Republican leaning, you might have to pick up the Post. And in Chicago, if you're a Republican, you pick up the Trib. And if you're not, you pick up the Sun-Times. You know, we get how this works. And online, Prodigy was editing, and the courts held them liable for the material that other goofballs were posting because Prodigy said that it was editing. Okay. Well, the federal government, which is to say the legislature, which is to say Ron Wyden and a couple of other guys, decided they didn't like the Prodigy result. They wanted these companies to be editing, to your point, to take down the smut. Smut was the big term of art in those days. They wanted to take down the smut, and no company would. Because if you engaged in censorship, you would be labeled a publisher, and then you'd open yourself up to liability and millions of lawsuits you couldn't possibly keep up. So this is why these 26 words became so famous, protecting these companies from liability.
Right, right.
Well, the sister language to that famous 26-word passage was what the Decency Act called the Good Samaritan provision, which is to say, we're going to protect you from liability. Even if you pull down pornographic material and other bad stuff, yada, blah, blah, yada, blah, blah, yada, blah, blah, and other objectionable material, meaning
anything. Meaning anything. Yeah, that's like the old Supreme Court ruling, right? Well, we can't define pornography, but we know it when we see it. So that way...
And we're going to allow you to edit it out.
Right.
And the federal government wanted these companies to pursue censorship so bad they were willing to protect them from liability. And that was the beginning. I would argue it was the original sin in terms of the federal government pressuring online companies to do their bidding, because it starts with smut, and then it goes to hate speech, and then it goes to undiversified opinions. And we have the Texas law and the Florida law that were passed a couple of years ago saying, if you're a platform of over 50 million people, you're no longer allowed to bias your censorship. And that has become a big brouhaha regarding whether that's a violation of their First Amendment right or not.
Yeah, and it's to your point, if you go back far enough, you'll see that the root cause of all this is itself government. So, and it goes back to that original sin type of thing, because you're talking about this also brought to mind the Backpage lawsuit, the Backpage arrest, which was a famous thing. Backpage, very much like Craigslist, right? It was an online want ad thing.
But it got nasty.
Yeah, they got shut down. They had everything impounded. Their owners were imprisoned. The case, after 10 years or so, just resolved itself, and not necessarily in the favor of the owner who died or committed suicide, I think, one of the two owners, over this whole mess. And it was precisely because, ironically, they said, we don't edit our stuff. And as a matter of fact, if it's a matter of something illegal going on, hey, feds, come in and take a look. We're letting you look at everything. And at the end of the day, that's what was used against them. So, if you go back far enough, to your point, to the Prodigy in the AOL days, like, all you have to do is determine whether there was any sort of editing going on. So if you were a true, true free speech platform and said, as long as I don't get a court order, everything stays up, which is honestly the true free speech position, right?
Yep.
The second you start saying, well, misinformation, well, hate speech, well, this, well, that, now you're in trouble. Because especially since, as you pointed out, from a technological perspective, you could build in the functionality that any user can block whatever they want and they never have to be exposed to it if that's what you're worried about. You could have parental controls. You can have a lot of stuff on the user end that would accomplish the same goals if only you had a government that didn't view itself as everyone's nanny.
And force these platforms to work as their sub-nannies.
Yes. They're unpaid contractors. They're unpaid contractors
because imagine how much better the world would work
if
instead of developing these algorithms, which they're allowed to do without facing any liability because of Section 230, instead of developing these algorithms, which in effect make them publishers, let's be honest, and monetizing them, imagine if they weren't allowed to publish, to edit, to push material on you, and instead they had to remain at arm's length to the companies who do provide the editorial services, then an ecosphere would develop of these subcontractors that, you know, you and I would hire someone who is very conservative to help us edit out a lot of weird stuff. And, you know, my daughter would hire a different service because, you know, she would want different she would want everything I say edited out, for example.
Right.
But everyone would hire a different service or dial in different settings maybe on certain services, right?
You mean basically what we had with radio, TV, and newspapers, just on a different delivery system, right?
Dial carefully, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and imagine if we had an ability to do that, these platforms could still monetize, I would argue sufficiently monetize for their development, this relationship with these contractors, with these API, right? Because you would be able to say, I'm completely making this up in a futuristic alternative universe, but I think that if you were Facebook, you'd be able to say, okay, we're going to, you know, open platform, you can interface with our content and control what the end user sees, but you're going to have to pay us a fee.
Right.
And that fee is going to be driven by how much traffic you handle. And Facebook is still going to get disgustingly rich, possibly exactly the same rich as they are now, maybe richer, maybe less rich. I can't predict that. But the system would work better. You wouldn't have that central authority subject to government oversight in the same way.
Yeah, and, you know, just because having lived through it, especially on the technology side, one of those key things that you think about in retrospect. So back in the day, when advertising was trying to identify people online. And by identify, I don't even mean like Big John lives at this address or Mike lives at that address. I meant like, hey, there's a white male, 60 years old, at this IP address who's really interested in sports and single malt scotch or whatever. So we're going to sell that information to the single malt scotch guys or to the,
right.
to the ESPN, right? Because they want to target right. him. So back in the day, there were two major players. One was DoubleClick, one was Atlas.
Yep.
The Atlas server and the DoubleClick server, DoubleClick eventually got bought out by Google. Atlas got bought out by Microsoft. It was for a company that I, they bought it from a company that I worked for by buying the company for $6 billion at the time. That technology.
That was a lot of money in those days.
That was a lot of money in those days. And at that time, if I recall, it was probably the two most sophisticated ways of
yep.
placing pixels and tracking people. Well, who bought Atlas after Google began to dominate and Microsoft kind of fell out of that game? Facebook. Facebook bought Atlas. Unless I'm completely having a senior moment here, Facebook bought Atlas, bought all that information, and walled it off to itself. That's why to this day, some of the best demographic targeting you have if you're an advertiser is on Facebook. Like,
yes.
they can tell you, like, you know, if you've tried to spend $100 to target a message on Facebook, you, when you get those options up, they're amazing, you know.
Yeah.
And give them credit on a technological basis. They refined that. And they made it first-party data, which means it's theirs. So all these privacy laws that exist now that you can't put pixels and you can't track people on browsers and stuff in Europe and in certain states, Facebook doesn't have that problem. It's their data. They bought it. You know, they.
In
they
contrast to X, where if you advertise on X, they give you – I don't know if you've ever seen this. They give you a warning that if you plug in a third party to help more refined targeting
right.
of your ad, it may undermine the efficacy of the advertising process. Something like this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and I can't quite figure out, like, is X having a hard time negotiating with these people? Like, your relationship is so bad that you're making a warning about how bad your subcontractors are. Like,
well, Elon,
what's your relationship like?
Yeah, yeah. So I know we're diverging just a little bit, but what happened was Elon monetized all of X. So even a small business like my own here at Grumblings Media, when we were trying to use the X API for our own purposes, like a lot of other developers, Elon all of a sudden slapped some ridiculous fees on there, like $10,000 a month or whatever. Now, I do get his point. There are costs to having that API. I get it. But he also, from his point of view, being an engineer, was, let's find out who's serious. You know, like, so.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
You know, this is how we make money from now on.
Yep.
And so that soured a lot of people who were used to the old version of X, the Jack Dorsey
X. Including our campaign last year, by the way.
There you go. You
know, that's how I discovered this when, you know, the social media people came and said, you know, are we going to start throwing away several thousand a month to have access to? No, we're not. Right.
Right.
Thanks
right.
for asking. But no, we're not.
So that's why you get that sort of divergence now on X, you know. But again, you know, each platform has its strengths and weaknesses. But to the extent now that we talked about the technology and everything and where the original sin is, how do you feel about these two, this Moody versus NetChoice LLC? It was a 2024 decision at the Supreme Court, which basically challenged, and I'm reading off so I don't misrepresent, it challenged two Republican-backed laws, one from Florida, SB 7072, and one from Texas, HB 20, that aimed to restrict how social media platforms moderate content, particularly to address perceived censorship of conservative viewpoints. These laws sought to limit platforms' ability to remove or demote user content based on viewpoints and impose requirements like notifying users of content removal with explanations. In a unanimous decision, the Supreme Court last year, almost a year ago to the day, vacated the lower court rulings and remanded the cases back to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth and Eleventh Circuits for further analysis. Basically, the Supreme Court said, no mas, you guys figure it out.
Yeah, you guys figure it out. It was a technical ruling in a lot of ways. These laws are blocked at the moment from going into effect. John, I think this goes into the category of sort of live by the sword, die by the sword stuff. You know, the government created this mess. Now it's got these social media platforms that, not quite carte blanche, but they can do a lot of editing, right? They've got their algorithms running like nuts, and they're making money hand over fist by controlling what it is that we see. They are pulling stuff down that the government wants them to pull down, including, you know, pulling down Hunter laptop stories when the FBI calls. There's no end to sources of frustration in this story. And then all of a sudden, the politicians believe that all of this might have a bias. I'm shocked. I'm shocked to learn that there might be bias in the system after you have given these companies protection from liability and darn near carte blanche to do what they want, editorializing. And so it's, you know, that's just the next shoe to drop, right? Of course the politicians are going to come back and say, well, that's not what we had in mind. You know, we want you to pull down hate speech, not what I say, because what I say, no matter how bad it is,
it's not hate speech.
It's not hate speech. I may hate that guy, and I need to say so, but I wouldn't call that hate speech.
Right.
It's just, you know, the next shoe to drop. And however these cases are resolved, as dopey as they are, this is not the end of it.
No.
And that's why I say, as a libertarian, we need to revisit the whole enchilada going all the way back to Section 230 and start over again and force these social media companies to just go back to being platforms, telegraph companies, telephone companies.
Right.
And don't let them editorialize and pull stuff down at all. I guess you would have to have a carve. You can't just shut down their business model at this point because you created it. You wouldn't be able to shut down all their algorithms. You might be able to force them into open source and allowing interface. That's a very tricky thing and a very tricky thing for a libertarian to say. But it might be the only remedy at hand.
To me, the remedy would just be take away the moderator's clause. Just take it away entirely, right? Because, listen, if you're smart enough to build Facebook, if you're smart enough to build X, if you're smart enough to build whatever else, YouTube, Rumble, and the government says your liability shield only holds for as long as you don't make any sort of moderation or editing decisions. You don't. Do you think it'll take them very much long to figure out who should be controlling that editing and moderation? They'll put it right back into the hands of the users then. Because then their liability is maintained. Technically, they could say, hey, this guy wants to watch naked women. This guy doesn't. We're giving him a very simple-to-use switch to handle that. And we're not making the decision. The user is. We've empowered the user. To me, if you just repealed that part of Section 230 or the CDA, if you repealed that part of it, where any moderation, any editing at all on the part of the platform constitutes publishing, you immediately fall into the publisher category. These companies very quickly.
I agree wholeheartedly, but that is the meat and potatoes, not the 26 words, because without the 26 words, you would fall back on the CompuServe decision, which was just fine in the first place. So whether you just delete the Good Samaritan provisions or the whole enchilada, I don't think matters. Right. I think you're absolutely correct about all of that. I also think it was fascinating to see what it was that Justice Thomas, arguably the most conservative justice on the Supreme Court, what he had to say about this, because it was a 9-0 Supreme Court decision to send these cases back to the circuit courts to sort out.
Right.
But for different reasons. And it was interesting to see that Thomas said that he thought that this was not a First Amendment issue.
Hmm.
Rather, this was an issue of these being platforms that should be treated as common carriers, like phone companies. And if the government decided that it wanted to pass a law that said they weren't allowed to be biased, then the government was allowed to pass a law that says they weren't allowed to be biased. In other words, he was saying, in effect, backdoor, he was saying they're common carriers. And I just wonder whether, now his arguments did not carry the day. The eight justices sent it back for different reasons, but they all agreed that it had to be sent back. But I do wonder whether Thomas would buy into what it is that you and I are talking about, which is that right. They need to be treated as common carriers, not allowed to show bias, and then go the next step and say they're not allowed to edit at all.
Right.
Because there's no such thing as editing without there being a bias. You know, once you've got the humans involved, and that's really the problem with all this, John, is once that humans are involved, it all goes to hell.
It does, and because you can't get perfection from imperfect creatures. So you do see that happening, even with the best of intentions. Like, I don't doubt the intentions of a lot of people in this debate, right? There's even liberals, again, that I'll always say I don't view as evil. I just view them as wrong.
But I think it's important to point out the Chinese Communist Party. If we're arguing, well, they shouldn't be the ones pulling down content because they're idiots, I think that's the wrong argument. The right argument is that we shouldn't be allowing governments to have that power. It's not because they're idiots, parenthetically speaking, they are.
Right.
But, you know, okay, now – back to the argument,
right?
The real argument is we shouldn't be allowing governments to have that power.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, everyone. I hope you've had an interesting time listening to Mike and Big John here bat around this social media, free issue platforms, publishers. It's all interesting stuff. Certainly reach out to us on X. If you have any questions or if you think of something that we got wrong or something you just want to give us a piece of your mind about, feel free to do so. You see our X handles right there on the screen. You can always find us at grumblingsmedia.com. Go there, find all our good episodes, all our good podcasts, but especially Liberty Lens. And also you can find us on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, and what else? Facebook, Rumble, YouTube, and X, of course. I forgot about X. Okay. Everyone, until next time, for Mike Tomat and myself, Big John, peace, everyone.